Hour number two of the program here. It is Chris Thompsonite Turtle with you until 10 o'clock. We got playoff baseball going on. We got Falcons on a bye week. Hawks preseason starting. Tech and UGA in full swing. What a time for sports here in the A. We're going to get into some true-false questions with Oren coming up here in just a sec. But, oh, before we do that, we got to dive into what happened today in a town that rivals few others in terms of NFL suffering. That's Cleveland. Cleveland town.
Cleveland rocks.
Yeah. Ohio. You know that Drew Carey's now been hosting The Price is Right for like 25 years? It's been that long.
Has it really?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. He started in like the mid-2000s, I think. It's been like 20, 25 years, something crazy like that. I saw like a meme about it the other day. Not Drew Carey. The Cleveland Browns, I should say. Got themselves into quite a bit of a situation today with one of their quarterbacks because it was announced that Dylan Gabriel is taking over for Joe Flacco, the miracle that couldn't be repeated for a second time in Cleveland. He's getting benched, and Dylan Gabriel, the third-round pick out of Oregon, is getting a shot. In response to that today, Shedeur Sanders was interviewed, if you want to call it that, by reporters and chose to mime. Yes, you heard me correctly. Mime, like a mime that you'd see in Paris, his answers, meaning spoke the words with no audio attached to them from his lips to the reporter's ears. And that brings about a lot of questions. Number one, why on earth would you choose to do that? Well, Oren, I did some digging. According to Adam Schefter, this was a response to a soundbite he heard from Rex Ryan on ESPN saying that essentially Shedeur Sanders needs to shut up and dribble. That's essentially what Rex Ryan was saying to Shedeur about his time in Cleveland right now. He just needs to go out there and prove that he's the best quarterback on the team. Okay, I guess. I mean, Rex Ryan opens up his trap a lot, and I would assume that Shedeur Sanders, being as young and hip as he is, probably doesn't really care much about what one Rex Ryan has to say. But, Oren, apparently I was very wrong about that hypothesis, and he cares enough to have now made a national media controversy out of this situation. It is leading SportsCenter. It's leading ESPN.com. It's on NFL Network. I'm looking at it right now. Shedeur Sanders just did every single one of his detractors a gigantic favor by saying, look at how immature he is. Look at how not ready for the NFL spotlight he is. Look at how not ready for NFL criticism he is. And to me, that's a shame because I think there's a natural inclination to be fascinated by Shedeur. I am. I'd like to see him play. I thought he looked pretty good in the preseason. I want to see what he has. But if you're a Shedeur detractor, that stunt, we'll call it, was everything and anything you needed from him to go, see, he's not ready to be a leader of men. He is an immature punk. Fair assessment, Oren?
It was a lot for him to do that. Like, just...
He literally, he said his answers as if he couldn't actually speak.
I get that you're... You know, Cleveland media is not Rex Ryan. Like, at some point or another, Shedeur is going to have to learn how to play the game. And not the game on the field, but the game off the field with the media. Because the media can be your best friends or your worst enemies. You're finding out kind of both sides of that right now. So, Learn to play the game, man.
He's just not helping himself. Between his dad constantly butting into the conversation, which he doesn't want, by the way. He said that publicly. But Deion can't help himself either. It runs in the family. When you got the juice, you got the juice. But that was unbelievable. You can go find it on Twitter or on YouTube. But he literally just sat there in front of reporters today, opened up his mouth, and mimed some words, and then walked off. And it was one of the more immature things you'll ever see. In a league of a lot of immature behavior, that was one of the more immature things you will ever see in the NFL. And with that, let's get to five true and false questions.
Question number one, sir, we will head to the conference where the aforementioned Cleveland Browns are playing in right now. The AFC North is beat all to hell, man. You got the Bengals are, they're a mess right now. As Troy and Buck were talking about them on Monday night, they're just not a great football team. You got Cleveland, who is Cleveland right now, and they're getting ready to start Dylan Gabriel, who I think of all the quarterbacks on that roster, he is arguably the worst, but we'll find that out. For it to be true or not on Sunday. And then,
well, he's set up to fail miserably.
Yeah, that's also true. Yeah, you have your first game. We're going to go across the pond and play in London against a team, by the way, who's been sitting and chilling all week in London, stewing after a loss last week across the pond. So good luck Sunday against those Vikings, Mr. Gabriel. And then you have the Ravens, who, in addition to not knowing the status just yet of Lamar Jackson, they had two big starters on that team were limited. Kyle Hamilton and Tyler Linderbaum both were limited today in practice with various injuries. So, like, this Ravens team right now is very, very beat up. And then you have the Steelers just sitting there all pretty right now, all healthy, coming back from across the pond with a victory. So my first question, sir, true or false, the AFC North is Pittsburgh's to lose right now?
It appears that way. I'm going to say true because Lamar, or in their reporting, he can miss 3 weeks if this thing is bad enough.
Cooper Rush, come on down, buddy. Cooper, speaking of the Price is Right.
Yeah, former Cowboy great Cooper Rush. Yeah, I'm going to say so. What, is Dylan Gabriel about to prove us all wrong and lead the Browns on a 5-game winning streak? I don't think so.
I don't know if stranger things have happened, so.
Yeah, I'm going to say true. I'm going to say Aaron Rodgers, if he continues to play well, he'll have the Steelers roll into another double-digit win season for Mike Tomlin.
There we go. Question number two. Staying with the Browns here, you mentioned Shador and his press conference today, which was just so bizarre, so odd. They don't have any ambition, it seems, to play him right now. And he's splitting reps right now with the scout team and the practice team. So, question number two, we'll see Joe Flacco return as a starter in Cleveland at some point during the season.
Well, today certainly didn't help. So, I'm going to say true. Shador Sanders remains the third quarterback. It doesn't look like they think he's ready. So, yeah, if something happens to Gabriel on Sunday, Flacco's going to be back in there. I don't see, like, what reason do I have to believe other than injury that Shador's going to get in there? I don't. So I'm going to say true.
Question number three. We played the audio today from Cam Ward after the loss by the Titans.
He called them booty cheeks.
Straight keeping it a buck. We are booty cheeks right now. 0-4 sitting there. Don't have a win. They look so lost, so listless. Just not anything good coming out of Tennessee right now at all.
Well, there's a reason they picked first overall.
Reason, a very good reason, and we're seeing it. True or false? Let's put this a little close to home for you, Chris. Jets win a game before the Titans do. True or false?
Yeah, I'm going to say true because the Jets have looked competitive, at least in three out of the four games they've been in it. They've been one-score games, and they've been able to put up a lot of offense in some of those games. You know, they ran for 200 yards on Monday Night Football and lost.
That is absurd.
That's almost impossible. They also had 100 yards worth of penalties.
So Georgia versus Bama ran for 200 yards and lost.
It's honestly unbelievable. So, actually, for once, I'll say something positive about the New York Jets. They win a game before the Tennessee Titans.
There you go, Jets fans.
That's your Super Bowl.
Be happy. All right. Questions number 4 and 5. I've got to combine this, but I got four teams here. Four teams. All of these teams are 2-2. We have a little something later that hopefully doesn't tie in too much to this, but the idea that I'm not wondering if these teams are contenders. I wonder if at 2-2, you think that they have the ability to make the playoffs. So here we go, sir. The New England Patriots are 2-2 right now. Are they a playoff team, true or false?
Oh, yeah, they're real live, especially in that division. They got a chance to beat up on a couple of bad teams in the Jets and the Dolphins.
Jets and Dolphins. You got four games against them.
I think they are real live. Drake May he's pretty good. He's coming along. I like them. I'm going to say yeah.
All right. A bit of a slow start, but we saw them on Monday night turn it around, albeit against the listless Bengals. But the Broncos are 2-2. Playoff team, true or false?
I'm going to say false for now.
That division is tough.
With a chance to turn it around. Yeah.
The Chargers and the Chiefs are looming in that one, too.
I still got to see a little bit more from Bo Nix to say that wasn't a fluke last year. I was so convinced he wasn't going to be good. I'm dying on this hill.
So many folks,
I'm dying on this hill. I'm going to say false.
He has
with
a chance to suck still.
Yeah, but I'm going to say false with a chance to turn it around.
All righty. Staying in the division, sir. They're 2-2 right now. Put up a 37 spot, I should say, this past weekend against the Ravens. The Chiefs.
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, you know my stance on the Chiefs. You got to be if you want to be the man, you got to beat the man. So I'm not out on the Chiefs until they're mathematically eliminated.
Okay. Mentioned this team a couple questions ago too, but still playing with a backup quarterback. Don't know when JJ McCarthy is going to be back, but the Vikings at 2-2.
I'm going to say yes cuz I don't think the division's as good as we thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
They have a chance to just hang around.
Packers aren't there yet.
Lions are starting to look like the old Lions, and the Bears are not good. So, yeah, I'm going to say they have a chance.
All right,
good stuff. Yeah, Oren was alluding to, don't go anywhere. At the top of the hour, 8 o'clock, we're going to run through every team in the NFL and decide contender or pretender. We'll do that at the top of the hour. But coming up next, let's talk some college ball with one of my favorites, Bill Bender, senior writer for the Sporting News. Get his thoughts on Tech, UGA, and a whole lot more. Don't go anywhere. It's Chris Thomas tonight. We will get back into the pro football conversation coming up at the bottom of the hour. Want to remind you that each Wednesday night, join Damian Dede Lewis for Prep Sports Nation, a comprehensive look at teams and athletes making news in high school sports across the state. It's brought to you by Ingles. Low prices, love the savings. That's Prep Sports Nation. Wednesday nights here on 92.9 The Game. That means as soon as I get done here tonight, Dede will be taking over. It's Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you until 10 o'clock. Let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline and talk some college ball with one of our favorites, Bill Bender, senior writer of the Sporting News. Bill, after Bama and UGA, we know about Kirby Smart's record against Alabama. I'm not concerned about that. What I am concerned about is how big, in your opinion, does this loss loom with more big games coming up for Georgia this season?
Well, I just... Not as much as you would expect. Yes, they lost the game. Yes, there were some plays that they'd probably like to have back. This is part of like the NFL-ification, that's what I call it, of college football, where you've just got to look on to the next one. I kind of fleshed out the remaining SEC schedule this week, and my takeaway is that it's probably going to take 10 wins to get the playoffs in the SEC, and as many as 5 teams could win 10 games in the SEC. So there's a long way to go.
How surprised are you that from what we saw in week one to where we are now, the rise of Alabama back to the point where they're able to beat a team like Georgia?
You know, I talked to Greg McElroy last week, and he brought up the point that it might have been the humidity, might have been the heat. And it's not an excuse, but he thinks they were – a little gassed in that first game, and he has a point because they do look like a different team. Ty Simpson playing very good football, right? He's not turning it over or anything like that. Ryan Williams looks like Ryan Williams. Their offensive line is good. Kalen DeBoer is a very good big game coach. You know, it's just the head scratching road losses. And, you know, but all of this is short lived in the SEC. That's another thing I think we've learned, right? That it does feel like the NFL, and that every week we're changing our mind about who the best team is. And we would change it again if Vanderbilt's able to knock off Alabama for the second straight year. Who knew that was going to be the best game of the week?
Well, right. And the thing is that you have all the other sexy intrigue of the quarterback who has been spouting his mouth off even before the season started. And I don't know if I've ever seen somebody back it up in the way that Diego Pavia has, especially considering, Bill, where he goes to school.
You know, it's got a lot, and it's popped up this week, obviously, fittingly so, that there's a little bit of Manziel there, right? Like, I was saying today, we remember Manziel beating Alabama the first time. To me, the second game was even better. Texas A&M lost, but you go back and remember, like, he's throwing to Mike Evans. I think he had like 500 and some total yards. AJ McCarron was answering. It's one of the best games I remember watching and being excited to watch. So if Vanderbilt could get that win, again, it's another one of those games that kind of shakes up the entire SEC playoff picture. It's amazing to me that when you break that down, 2 weeks ago, you know, I had LSU and Georgia on top. Now you have, like, Alabama and Ole Miss and Texas A&M on top, and it just switches every week.
So we mentioned Florida State a little earlier in the chat. What do they need to do blueprint-wise to beat Miami?
Well, they better try to win up front, and that's not going to be easy. Miami has it in the trenches on both sides. Reuben Bain, Francis Malgoa. Those are first-round top five picks. Building an offensive line around those guys and defensive lines. Reuben Bain might be the best defensive player in college football. So that's number one. Castellanos has to make plays, can't turn the ball over. Carson Beck, same deal. This is a very good Miami football team, though, in the trenches. And can they go into that Doak Campbell environment? It's been a minute since we've watched Florida State at night, at home, tomahawk chop, all that stuff going on. It's going to be an interesting environment. I can't wait. It makes me feel young, like I always say, because it makes me feel like this is the closest thing in a while we've had to those great 90s games. It's not quite that, though, when you consider the number of Hall of Famers that were playing back in those games.
Yeah, we'll just call up, you know, Michael Irvin and Danny Cannell, and we'll do the whole thing all over again. Oregon, we know here because we had him in Athens. Dan Lanning is a special dude. For those who don't understand how much respect he has and how well he is commanding that program, Bill, they're brewing something special in Oregon.
He is as intense can be. He's as aggressive as can be. And I was at that game last Saturday. The way that Dante Moore handled that environment couldn't have been more impressive. Because that is a – in my mind, I knew you guys down there would say, like, Death Valley at night or Auburn, the whiteout is tough to play in, man. The crowd's worth a touchdown, like Dan Lanning said. But for them to go in and get that win and stay composed in double overtime, Dylan Thienemann to make a huge play, I think you guys know it, right? Like, so begs the question, if one of these SEC programs pops open and they want a guy like Dan Lanning, how much would it take? I don't think he's leaving Oregon, though. I think he likes the setup there and the resources, and they have more than enough to be dominant in the Big Ten for a very long time.
Yeah, I think he'd go to the NFL before he went to another power college program. Honestly, I think he has that much – he's building, I should say, that much cachet. Speaking of openings, I've been racking my brain. Is there anybody to you other than actually hanging on to Bobby Petrino, which I would be astounded if they did, that makes sense for Arkansas?
Well, I know Rhett Lashley kind of shot it down, but he's the guy, the first guy that makes sense. Former quarterback, has done a fantastic job with the Mustangs, and, you know, he's going to continue to do that. But it begs the question, is it easier to win? Arkansas's got the better stage, no question, but you can do well at SMU. He's done well there, and they've got great recruiting base and all those things, and you can sneak in the playoff every once in a while out of the ACC. Which one's the better job? Dan Mullen's name would probably come up, you know, especially if he continues to win at UNLV. He did well at Mississippi State. Actually did well at Florida, too. So I think he's a very intriguing name as that search goes on.
Georgia Tech here. They avoided a near-epic collapse against Wake Forest. They're on a bye this week. They get a pesky Virginia team after the bye. Is that another game that they should be worried about?
Yeah, I mean, and then a sneaky good game on the schedule this week is Virginia and Louisville. Louisville's a good football team. So the ACC's got plenty of hopefuls there. I think Georgia Tech, obviously, one of the best stories of September, going 5-0, the Clemson win, the win last week, where I don't know about you, but if I'm Wake, I'm kicking that extra point. I know we all say it, like hindsight of 2020, but, you know, you're at home. Why not keep that game going a little bit? But they are, Georgia Tech is going to be favored more than likely in every game they play until they get to Georgia. And imagine the excitement you guys will have down there. I know you talked about it, right? The possibility of 10-1 and 11-0, or 10-1 and 10-1.
Oh yeah,
that'd be amazing.
Oh yeah, it would be. It would. The only thing that could match the intensity of what happened last year, Bill, as we're talking to Bill Bender, would be that, because of the way that that game finished out a year ago. So Ole Miss, they've sort of vaulted themselves into maybe not even the darlings of the SEC, but one of the darlings of college football. Do they have the makings to potentially run the table?
This is the best team. And Trinidad Chambliss is a big piece of that. I mean, I don't want to say they lucked into that, but, I mean, the last 3 weeks to have a Ferris State transfer clear 300 passing yards, give them a running element in the offense, and they were impressive. I picked LSU to win that game last week. I don't – you make fun of me about that, I guess. But, I mean, I really thought that LSU defense would limit them and Nussmeier would make a few plays. But this is a very good – and if you say they should be the highest-ranked team, and I think they're going to win the SEC championship, they've got a two-game stretch coming up in a few weeks where they play Georgia and Oklahoma. That's really it. I mean, if they get a split there, playoff.
So as we continue to look across the college football landscape, a couple of questions at this juncture in the season as we start to sort of separate who are the legit contenders and pretenders, at least for a shot at getting into the college football playoff and having a shot at the whole thing. A team that really sticks out to me a lot right now is Texas Tech, not just because they spent all the money, but because of the way that they've been 4-0, and I like the momentum that they're gaining. I just don't have the resume behind them, Bill. That's my issue, to trust that what I'm seeing right now through 4 weeks is real. How do you feel?
Well, I thought it was pretty real how they went to Utah and took care of business with their – I'm most impressed with their defense. You know, they're up front, their front seven, paid for or not. Rodriguez is a fantastic linebacker. They're good up front. And I think that's going to be a difference maker. Can they withstand the craziness that comes with being in the Big 12? That's what we'll find out. You know, I think they can. And they're very exciting. And you mentioned NIL, but look who's in the – top 12-ish, you know, top 12, and if we did playoff rankings, they'd all be in the field. That Texas A&M, Texas Tech, they'd all be in the playoff right now. So, yeah, well, money matters a little bit, and those guys have it, and it's showing on the field.
Yeah, I guess the only question was going into it is, can money buy the necessary cohesion? Right? Mm-hmm. Can you just bring a bunch of high-priced players together, put them on the field, and say, make this thing happen? But so far, so good.
Well, I think you have to have a mix, right? Like, if you're Georgia or Ohio State or Alabama, you have some built-in advantages where you're going to recruit the top players, and it's about development and getting to the league and those things. And you know, if you did, to me, it's like it's risky if you did that strategy every year where you just brought in 40 transfers, because imagine an NFL team bringing in 50 new guys every year. Eventually, they're not going to be very good. So I think there are some checks and balances to that. But in the short term, like I always compare this to baseball. Like if there's a mid-market team in the playoffs right now that pops in, I mean, you're not going to hear their fans. Like I'm in Ohio. If the Reds knock off the Dodgers the next two nights, there's not a person around here that's going to complain about what their roster looks like.
Right, or their payroll is literally a third right. Of the Dodgers, which is crazy to think about. Before I let you go, you obviously watched every snap of Shedeur Sanders in college. Does what he's doing now in Cleveland, now getting into antics with the media, does that surprise you? Did you think he had maturity issues, or is this par for the course?
I always liked Shedeur the player. I thought he was so tough in Colorado. I thought, you know, he took a lot of hits. He elevated that program. They were a couple games away from winning the Big 12. So today is, I got to admit, is bizarre. Seeing that clip of him doing the mime thing and, you know, his frustration with Dylan Gabriel. I mean, at the end of the day, man, I've followed the Browns forever. He's going to get a chance to start at some point this year if the Browns quarterback track record means anything. So why not just do – that's like take the layup, right? Just say, hey, yeah, I hope Dylan does great. I'm here for him. We're going to help any way we can. Instead, it becomes a story that you and I are going to talk about.
Right, and that's exactly the problem. And my whole point is you're just giving people who don't like you all the necessary fodder in the world to, A, continue to not like you, and then, B, point a giant finger and say, see, this is why you're not starting in the NFL, because this is what you do, and you don't represent the organization the right way. So I agree with you. It's just an interesting tactic, to say the least.
So easy, and so easy to avoid. And I like Shedeur. I like how he played. I've always liked his touchdown to interception ratio. I like how he throws the ball down the field. He's a tough kid. And, you know, the pressure of being Deion's son, I understand all that. But you're just adding to something unnecessary. It's an unnecessary story, and these guys should know better.
Absolutely, 100%. All right, my friend, we will talk to you soon. We'll check you out in the sporting news. Make sure you check out Bill Bender's work there, one of the best in the biz. Appreciate you as always.
Hey, anytime. Thanks for having me on.
All right.
Take care.
Bill Bender there of the sporting news. When we get back, let's talk some more National Football League. Our buddy Frank Schwab of Yahoo Sports is going to stop by. What does he think about the Falcons? Contender or pretender? Leading into our segment at 8 o'clock, where Oren and I will go over every team in the NFL and decide right now, while the Falcons are on the bye week, who is a contender and who is a pretender. Big football hour coming up on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Rolling along with you here on a Wednesday hump day edition of Chris Thomas Tonight. Turtle with you until 10 o'clock weeknights here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We'll continue our football conversation right now on the WadeFord.com hotline as Frank Schwab joins us from Yahoo Sports. Make sure you check out the Inside Coverage podcast. And Frank, let's start here in Atlanta. An up and down season so far for the Falcons through four games. They're on their bye week, but we have seen a lot of promise, a nice bounce back last week in a win against the Commanders. What have you seen so far?
Yeah, just like you said, up and down. It's hard to know what to make of them so far. Michael Penix has been inconsistent. I mean, you go from getting shut out against the Panthers, who have a terrible defense. One of the weirder results you're going to see, and then they come back and they look great against the Commanders and blow them out. And Michael Penix throws for, I think, 313. Like, I don't even know how to gauge that. The defense has honestly looked pretty good, much better than I thought. I didn't think that defense would come together so quick relying on rookie pass rushers, but it has been pretty good. So you just look at it all and you say, yeah, 2-2. That's about right. That's what you've seen out of this team. I don't think they're very good yet. I don't think they're bad. I just think we don't know what they are. It's one of they're kind of a mystery to me anyway, as we, you know, head into the second quarter of the season.
So many headlines going on in the NFL right now, but maybe none more surprising than the 1-3 Ravens with a chance of Lamar Jackson. According to several reports, he has a chance to miss up to a couple of weeks with an injury. How big of a blow is that, and can they overcome it?
And if it was just Lamar, it would be bad, right? Like, I mean, I think he's the best player in the NFL, and you go down to Cooper Rush, and that's going to be a challenge. Like, there's just no way around that, right? But it's about 12 other guys on their injury report. Ronnie Stanley, Roquan Smith, and half of their secondary. It's just unbelievable how many injuries they're dealing with right now. And you just look at their schedule and you say, Okay, we got two home games left before the bye against the Texans and the Rams. We got to survive this somehow. They have to come up with at least one win and probably win both games. You don't want to go in your bye 1-5. Like, you're almost done at that point. So I don't know. I look at their – they're going to have a preseason lineup out there on Sunday against the Houston Texans. It's – and I'm not saying they're not going to compete because John Harbaugh is a great coach and they still – even missing a ton of guys, they still do have talented players. But it's absolute critical mass for the Ravens at this point, I think. I don't know how they kind of survive all these injuries and come out looking better after their bye in week 7 because it's just – there's so many guys hurt. And you do wonder, you know – you don't want to bring back Lamar Jackson before he's ready, but if you lose this week to the Texans, you're facing the Rams at home, you're like, well, we got to kind of roll the dice and hope he can get through this week. I don't know. They're just in a really, really, really tough spot.
Chiefs offensive explosion in that game, more about the Ravens defense and their injuries on it, or the Chiefs finally found it?
I think it's more the Ravens, but I won't discount how good the Chiefs looked. And this is Patrick Mahomes. If people had watched the games, Patrick Mahomes was playing at a really, really, really high level. He just didn't have anybody around him. I thought he was absolutely positively carrying that franchise for a few games. And look what happens when you just give him one weapon. You give him Xavier Worthy, who wasn't, I don't even think, totally healthy. Didn't play 100% of the snaps or anything. You just give him one guy. He's like, all right, I can do something with this. And they look a ton better. And I think if you think ahead, and it's like, okay, well, at some point, you know, week 7, Rashee Rice comes back, and he's not coming back off an injury. He doesn't. There's no question of like, oh, is this ankle injury going to linger? Now he's just coming off suspension, so he should be fully healthy, fully ready to go. Once you put Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy with Patrick Mahomes, you move everybody down a notch. Travis Kelce doesn't have to be the guy, and Tyquan Thornton doesn't need to have this huge role in the offense or anything. All of a sudden, you might see the Chiefs get really hot in the second half of the season. I've had so much respect for what Patrick Mahomes has done these first four games. I know, you know, you can sort of say, oh, well, they started 1-2. He couldn't have been that great. He was. He's really been playing some of his best football, I thought. And now it's going to get a lot easier for him getting guys back in the lineup.
Can you make the argument that the Eagles actually thrive off of all the drama that seems like is self-created? Because they're the best team in football by a large margin, in my opinion. But the only thing that stops them is themselves.
It's amazing. Like any other team is 4-0. The Buffalo Bills are 4-0. The other 4-0 team in the NFL. You don't hear a peep out of them. Like it is, they're happy. The locker rooms, everybody's getting along. Everybody's doing their job. Everybody's having a piece of the pie. Everybody's great. Eagles at 4-0. It's like miserable because it's just Philly. There's always some drama in Philadelphia. And I love it, to be honest, because, I mean, it gives us stuff to talk about, doesn't it? A.J. Brown's not happy now. And the Eagles, I will say this, the Eagles are 4-0, and you might be right. They might be the best team in football. I mean, they certainly were deserving champions last year. They've won 20-21, all that kind of stuff. But when you look at their first four games, there's been at least one quarter in every game and sometimes a half of each game where they've looked terrible. You think back that the Rams actually dominated them for about 2.5 quarters. Last week against the Buccaneers, they didn't complete a pass in the entire second half. I don't know what's going on with them. They're 4-0 with 3 quality wins, an unbelievably good roster. Obviously, they won a Super Bowl last year. But there's just something missing with that Eagles team. I'm really interested to see them play the Broncos on Sunday. I think the Broncos are a good football team. They lost two games at the Colts, at the Chargers, both playoff teams, with no time left on the clock. Otherwise, they'd be 3-1, 4-0. We'd be having a different conversation about the Broncos. I'm really interested to see how the Eagles look against the Broncos. I think that's the most – this week is not a great week of games. I'm not going to lie to you. There's no crazy great marquee game, I don't think. I think that one's the most interesting because I want to see, hey, can the Eagles keep skating by or do we actually see their A game for the first time this season?
Talking all things NFL with our buddy Frank Schwab, Yahoo Sports. Make sure you check out the Inside Coverage podcast. What do you make of the injuries for San Francisco? How do you even explain it?
Yeah, I mean, they were the most injured team in the NFL last year as far as games lost and all that kind of stuff, the metrics. And that you think it's bad luck, right? Like, okay, that's not going to repeat. We just had a bad, unlucky season. And then you come back and are the most injured team in the NFL again. It's It's unbelievable. And, you know, we did just talk about this on the Inside Coverage podcast about, you know, the 49ers are going to have to sit down and have a real discussion about what are we doing wrong? Is our training wrong? Is our off-season program wrong? Is our strength and conditioning, our athletic training staff, what needs to change? Or is this just a ridiculous, ridiculous run of bad luck? I tend to think it's mostly bad luck. It's unbelievable, though. They're going to go into tomorrow's game without Brock Purdy, George Kittle, Juwan Jennings, Ricky Pearsall, Brandon Ayuk, and Nick Bosa. That's like the list of guys you send to the Pro Bowl, right? Like, here's our Pro Bowl players. Like, that's how bad it is for the 49ers. They're playing without all those guys tomorrow. Christian McCaffrey had 31 carries or 31 touches on Sunday. I don't think you can ask him to have 40, like, 4 days later. So it's just tough on the 49ers. I thought they did an excellent job to get to 3-0 despite all the adversity. But now you look, and unless they pull off an upset, they're going to be 3-2 dealing with a ton of injuries going forward. Nick Bosa ain't coming back. He's their most valuable player in my mind. So, just a ridiculous run of bad injury luck for the 49ers.
Can Jackson Dart in New York still showcase himself without neighbors?
I think so to some extent. I think we need to have realistic expectations for Jackson Dart. I thought he played well last week. I don't think he made anybody forget about Eli Manning and Phil Sims yet. But he's going to be a good player. There's just going to be ups and downs. And I do think Malik Nabers being out really sets him back because you look at it, they just don't have much anymore. Cam Scadaboo has played very well at running back, and he'll help there. But you look at the receivers, and it's Wandale Robinson, Darius Slayton, and Theo Johnson, and the guys who have some talent, but there's nobody who's just elevating Jackson Dart's game like Malik Nabers would. So pretty tough for him the rest of the year, but I just think as long as we, and I know this is impossible in the NFL, and we talk about the NFL and analyze the NFL and all that kind of stuff, if we keep a level head about Jackson Dart and what our expectations are for him the rest of the year, I think he's going to grow it just fine and have a good, solid rookie season and build a foundation for himself where the Giants can feel really good about him going forward. But, yeah, it's New York, it's the NFL, it's the Giants. It's a first-round pick at quarterback. We're probably going to freak out every single time Jackson Dart plays a game.
The other team in New York, what can you even say? The Jets are jetsing 0-4, another new coach, goodness. Another new quarterback, lose an embarrassment of a game on Monday Night Football. Where's the hope for this franchise? It's hard to find, Frank.
It really is. It really, really is. And I thought it was Aaron Glenn. And I'm still not giving up on Aaron Glenn after four games or anything. I thought it was a great hire. I think he's a guy who can set a culture there. I like him. I like Aaron Glenn as a coach. But I can't lie to you. I sat there Monday and watched that game like everybody else did. And just said there are every telltale sign of a poorly coached team is here. The penalties, the turnovers, the just dumb mistakes. You get to a point where you're like, well, that's how Aaron Glenn too. He can yell at his team all he wants and he can get frustrated on the sideline. But some of that stuff is just, you look like a poorly coached team right now. You can't beat the Dolphins who played most of that game without Tyreek Hill. Like, come on. Like, I just think it's not been a good run out for them. It's not going to get easier for Aaron Glenn. I mean, if he goes, I thought that team was going to actually compete this year. I did. You look and they still have a lot of talented dudes, Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall and Quinton Williams and Sauce Gardner and all the rest. There's a lot of talent, young talent on that team. What are you going to do? You're going to go 3-14 though in that market, and already people are questioning you what you can be. And They need to win bad. That's the team. Like, if you're talking about which team in the NFL needs to win the worst, the Ravens might be at the top of that list, but the Jets aren't far behind. They have a winnable game on Sunday. Maybe they can get one because it just seems like a team that, man, if you get to 0-8, 0-9 in that market with that fan base, it's going to get really ugly for Aaron Glenn.
Well, you mentioned the talent, but the talent gets neutralized when you have 13 accepted penalties for 100 yards.
Yeah, it's awful.
And that goes, unfortunately, to Aaron Glenn as the coach. All right, before I let you go, please explain to me why Shedeur Sanders put his foot in his mouth literally the way that he did today.
I don't know what he's doing. Like, Shador's a rookie, but I'm not giving him that excuse because of any rookie who's come into the NFL recently, nobody has had more media exposure in her lifetime than Shedeur Sanders. So Cleveland media goes up to, and I don't even know what they're basically just asking him, what he thinks of Bill Gabriel getting the start, and he just pantomimes answers, and you know, he's just moving his lips, and like, what are you doing? Like, just say, hey, not today, guys. It's Dylan's day. Let him be taught, or just give a couple cliches. Hey, I'm just rooting for Dylan. I'm here to support him. Just trying to get better myself and practice. Blah blah blah. He does that, and he becomes a story. And it's the Shador thing is already weird because I've compared him to, a million times to Tim Tebow, not as a player, but just as far as this attention that follows him around constantly, and people freak out on both sides. You can never be too positive about Shador Sanders for those people. You can never be too negative about Shador Sanders for the haters. It's just, he knows this too. And I think that it's one of those, when we talked in April, in late April, when everyone was like, how do you not take a shot on Shador Sanders in the fourth round, in the early fifth round? It's because of this. It is because of exactly this. Because teams knew this isn't some normal third string, fifth round quarterback. He comes in and he's the center of attention, and everything he does is magnified, and the circus comes with him. And a lot of teams, I think, around the NFL in the next couple of days are going to be like, yep, that's why. That's why we didn't draft Shador Sanders. And I'm not trying to, like, you know, just throw Shador Sanders under the bus. I like Shador. I'm based in Colorado. I saw him and his father and Travis Hunter turn around an absolutely dead CU program. But, yeah, that was not a good look for him today, and hopefully he'll learn from that going forward.
Frank, appreciate it. As always, we'll be checking out the pod. We'll chat soon.
Absolutely, appreciate it.
All right, that is Frank Schwab. Make sure you check him out at Yahoo Sports NFL, one of my favorites to talk ball with. Hey, this Friday, join us at Twin Peaks in Buckhead for a special broadcast of the Midday Show with Andy and Rende. Come have lunch with us and enjoy the scenic views as we get ready for a big weekend of college and pro ball. That's Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Twin Peaks in Buckhead on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Excited for what's next, Oren and I. Falcons are on their bye week. Let's take a look at the state of the NFL. Contenders or pretenders? How many contenders will we have? Let's figure this out next.